And so I had to kind of reinvent how I operated totally and start this LinkedIn training business from scratch, which was a mad idea in 2008, by the way, Matt, because as I say, hardly anyone was doing it. There was nobody in the UK doing it. And I think there's one other guy in Europe, if I remember rightly. And almost everybody that I mentioned it to turned around to me and sort of, why on earth would you need to teach someone how to use LinkedIn? Why is that a thing? But it's not a thing. Nobody needs to do that.
Constraints drive innovation. Hey everyone, it's Matt here for another episode of Thinking Inside the Box, a show where we discuss complex issues related to work and culture. If you're interested in checking out our other content, you can find us at bentohr.com and wherever you find your favorite podcasts by searching Thinking Inside the Box. And if you enjoy the work we're doing here, consider giving us a 5-star rating, leaving a comment, and subscribing. It ensures you get updated whenever we release our new content and really helps amplify our message. In today's episode, I chat with Mark Williams, founder of ETN LinkedIn Training, an organization at the leading edge of LinkedIn thought leadership, workshops, and training sessions, each designed to educate and inspire you to get the most out of this incredible platform. Mark is also the host of the popular LinkedIn Formed podcast, a show I'm actually subscribed to, and it's a must listen for anyone interested in better understanding LinkedIn and all of its nooks and crannies. Together, we tackled a lot of fun topics, beginning with Mark's professional journey, what life was like as a LinkedIn trainer back in 2008, and his insights on how the platform has evolved over the last 14 years. Spoiler alert, it's changed a lot. From its early days as a predominantly recruitment platform, LinkedIn has evolved to become a true social media networking site, with content creators and contributors from around the world adding their voice to topics related to all things work. It gave me the opportunity to share my own LinkedIn experiences, from the humble beginnings to now a growing audience born from sharing my own insights and being vulnerable on the platform and networking. And together we provide, if I do say so myself, a really compelling case for leaders of all stripes to leverage LinkedIn both personally and professionally. As always, we had a lot of fun. Mark's a real joy to chat with, and I hope you enjoy it. And now I bring you Mark Williams. Mark, they say that podcasters shouldn't have favorites. And yet, as a big fan of you and your own podcast, I'm really excited for today's conversation. Thanks for joining me.
So I'm your favorite podcaster. Is that what you're saying, Mark?
Or, wow. Did I read that right? I have 96 previous guests right now who are currently plotting my demise. So maybe...
Well, it's very nice of you to say that. And it's great when, I don't know about you, but I love it when people reach out who are listeners to the show that you've never heard from before, you know, and from all around the world and different roles and different sort of things that they do. And I love that. I wish more people would do it, to be honest with you. So it was exciting to hear from you just as a listener. And then even more exciting when you said that you had your own podcast and would I like to come on your show? So I'm privileged to be here.
Well, and actually, the reason I engaged you, Mark, was because you put up a really lovely and vulnerable post and talked a bit about how you basically your experience with the podcast world. And, you know, I'd listened to a recent episode with Kim Arnold that I'll come back to later on in today's conversation. And I just wanted to express some gratitude for the value that you're bringing to the broader audience. As a podcaster myself, I know that sometimes it can feel like you're talking into a can and you really don't know who's engaging in your content and you may not have a full appreciation of the impact that it's having. And I wanted to take a moment just to send you a quick LinkedIn message and say, hey, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you. And I was pleased to get your response back. And it sounded like it came at a really good time.
It did actually. Yeah. I think it was around the time someone had contacted me and, the feedback's always great, isn't it? You know, feedback helps us improve. But at the same time, negative feedback can sometimes be exaggerated in your own head, can't it? Like, oh, it's a disaster. And very rarely ever get negative feedback, but someone had sent me a message literally that morning that I received your message saying, and they were a long time listening to the show and someone that had been in touch a number of times before, but saying that they were disappointed with the amount of interviews that I'd been doing. Because my show is quite different to most podcasts in that it's not an interview show at all. I do occasionally bring guests on as Kim was one, but only when I feel that they've got something of great value to add to the audience. But essentially, the show is really me talking about LinkedIn. And I think that's what listeners have got used to. I think when someone is, you know, a true listener, that they listen every week and they really buy into it and they're very invested in you. Then if you start changing something, there's always going to be some people that don't like that, you know, and I'd rather they let me know than not, but it still was a bit of a hit. And I thought, you know, I thought bringing guests on was a good thing and enhances it, but obviously it's not for everyone. And then I got your message. So it was really uplifting. So yeah, it was great timing.
Yeah, I don't think it's a binary question. I think there's value in doing monologues, and you certainly bring a ton of value to that format. And there's also something to be said for having different perspectives. And I thought Kim in particular, when she brought her perspective around email marketing and cold outreach, was a really interesting topic, and you were able to really deftly blend it into a LinkedIn conversation. So I thought it was perfectly aligned, and I hope to hear more of them in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it'll never be... you know, dominated by interviews and stuff, but I probably carry on at the same level as I am at the moment. You know, it's as and when. To be honest, the only reason that happened was there just so happened to be, because I operate on the basis of as and when. If an opportunity comes up, I meet someone and I think they've got something to add value, then I'll bring them on the show. It just so happened there were a number, you know, that happened at the same time, or, you know, in close succession. So they were thinking I've converted to, you know, just interviews. I think that's probably the problem. You see, the difference between my show and, again, most shows is because of the nature of the content, I want to keep it really fresh, and LinkedIn changes all the time. And one of the things that I know people really appreciate about the show is that I keep them up to date and informed on everything that's going on in terms of changes and what those changes mean to us. And you can blink and miss something on LinkedIn changing, like a lot of social media. And so my show is recorded every week, the week that it comes out, which is a bit of a pressure, as you can imagine. But it's the way I like it to be, actually. It keeps me on my toes and means that the information is always fresh and new and up to date for the audience. So because of that, and a number of people had just come up that were suitable at the time to interview, it just meant that I had a spate of like three or four interviews in a space of about 6 weeks. So
that's the way the timing works. And yeah, absolutely do want to get into LinkedIn in more detail. Before we do, I think it would be really helpful for the audience to understand a bit about who Mark is, what Mark's all about, and kind of what led you to this career path.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've been doing what I've been doing now since 2008. And before that, I had a career in recruitment. And for just short of 20 years, actually, in 12 years of that, I actually ran a recruitment business. And that's, as you can imagine, how I first came across LinkedIn, really. I'd gone through a career progression, a fairly rapid rise to the top, in a succession of organizations getting increasingly larger as I went through, to the point where I was running a division of a larger recruitment group. And basically, if I was to summarize what happened to me in my career when I look back on it, is that I was a victim of progression. Now, most people think progression's a good thing, but I found that the higher the ladder I got, the less I enjoyed my job. And at the end, I had a massive level of responsibility and also a real emotional attachment to the business, because I started the business, this division that I was running, I started it from scratch. And it had grown to a reasonable size. And the group that I was working for had been taken over twice, actually, by different organizations. And I found myself in a situation where if I'd sat down and just analyzed where I was in my career, I'd have said, I really need to go and do something else because I'm not enjoying this at all. And I never did that, never once thought about that at all, because I was just absolutely determined to keep growing that business, keep hitting targets, keep achieving things, et cetera, et cetera. But I was deeply unhappy, really. And the opportunity came because when we were taken over, I had a new CEO who I didn't really see eye to eye with. And he was a fairly straightforward guy. And he just said to me, this isn't really working out. We just need to break tires, really. And I went, are you sacking me? And he went, no, not really. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's not really working for you and for me. And it's just difficult, isn't it? And I went, yeah, it is difficult. He said, you're not really enjoying yourself, which is a big wrench for me to kind of move 12 years, starting that business from scratch. Almost felt like I owned it, but I didn't. And that was an important transition in my career. Now, I'd already been doing LinkedIn training internally for the company that I was working for. Because I had a number of staff working for me. They were all using LinkedIn as recruiters do, but not very well. And so I looked to see if I could get some training. We got external trainers in for most things. And I couldn't find anyone. There were a few in the States, but there was nothing in the UK at all. And I thought, well, that's an interesting idea. Probably someone should be doing that. And that kind of coincided. And the other thing I suppose about that is the training I'd done, I really enjoyed. I really felt a passion for it. And so when I left that organization, I initially did actually play with recruitment as well for a little bit, just on my own, but didn't really enjoy it. And then set up as a LinkedIn trainer on my own, working from home, nobody else around me. I've been, you know, all of my career in busy, lively, sales orientated offices. And then all of a sudden I was sat in a bedroom in my house. You know, it was like absolutely no energy coming from anyone else. It's funny, I always used to think that I was the most energetic person in every team I ever worked in, until I worked on my own and I realized how much I needed other people's energy to lift me at times. So I had to kind of reinvent how I operated totally and start this LinkedIn training business from scratch, which was a mad idea in 2008, by the way, Matt, because as I say, hardly anyone was doing it. There was nobody in the UK doing it. And I think there's one other guy in Europe, if I remember rightly. And almost everybody that I mentioned it to turned around to me and sort of, why on earth would you need to teach someone how to use LinkedIn? Why is that a thing? It's not a thing. Nobody needs to do that. And it was great because I enjoy that kind of challenge. To me, that's a bit like selling ice to the Eskimos in a way, and sort of how can I find a way? I know that they need training in it. I know that they don't know what they don't know, right? And I know there's a lot more to this, but equally, I've got to overcome this barrier that everyone thinks this is a crazy idea. And the first year or so was hard work, but I guess you don't achieve something unless you have to go through that barrier of working really, really hard to get something up and running. 2008 / 2009, not exactly the most positive economic conditions at the time either, right?
I was going to say.
So it was a tough old battle to get going. And obviously it's a completely different world now. There's thousands of LinkedIn trainers all around the world and probably thousands just in the UK, or certainly hundreds, high hundreds, I would imagine. People often say to me, do you think that's, is it tougher now? There's a lot more competition. Is that a bad thing? And I don't really see it as a bad thing, because when you've been the kind of, I don't want to call myself an innovator, but, you know, the first to do something, you kind of miss competition, if I'm honest. Because the thing about competition is competition are opening doors, but not going through them all the time, right? And then you're the third or fourth person to come along and knock on that door that's already slightly ajar, and then you happily walk through it. And that's the way business works, right? That's the way sales works. You very rarely approach someone for the first time and just straight away win their business. And I really missed competition. And when more people started doing it, I enjoyed that, you know, and a lot of my best friends are competitors now. You know, there's loads of other people that I know really, really well, who I've known for years and collaborated with and all sorts. So anyway, that's how I got into it, if you like. And initially it was very recruitment focused, because LinkedIn was very recruitment focused in those days. I mean, still as a business they are, but as a community, not. But certainly in those early days of using, when I was using LinkedIn and when I first trained LinkedIn, it was very much a recruitment focused platform for users and for the company. And so I kind of developed from there, really. Now recruitment's a much smaller part of what I do. Do little bits here and there, but the main focus of what I do is broadly LinkedIn visibility. So encouraging people to use LinkedIn in better ways to become more visible, better known in their niche markets, whatever they do, whatever market they're in, and whatever their objectives. So that could be that they are recruiting, or it could be that they're looking for a job, or it could be they're looking to grow their business, or it could be they're looking for investors because they're just launching a business. There's a whole load of things that you can achieve by being visible and influential on LinkedIn. And my job is to show people how to achieve that.
Well, and flash forward 14 years later, I think you proved you're right. Like, I think you made the right decision, Mark. It's, I mean, as you mentioned, the platform has evolved and matured and grown in such leaps and bounds that it must be really affirming and must feel good to know that you placed a really big bet in 2008. And then, as you mentioned, went through a significant headwinds with regards to the global economic crisis and recession. And then to continue and stay the path only to realize so much success along the way, that must feel great.
Yeah, it does. It's interesting because it's been, people often, this is the longest job I've ever had in my career. No, that's not true, is it? I suppose it's the longest single job, but not the longest sort of area of career. So LinkedIn is 14 years, LinkedIn training is 14 years, recruitment was 20 years or nearly 20 years, but the longest job of that was 12 years. So this is now my longest job ever. And people say to me, you know, how do you not get bored, right? How do you, you know, keep yourself motivated? And honestly, that's not that difficult with LinkedIn because it changes so much. And I'm not talking about the platform per se, although I am to a degree. And the way I describe LinkedIn is I see it as three different entities. So you've got LinkedIn, the company, right? Owned by Microsoft, blah, blah, blah. You've got LinkedIn.com, the website, which is what most people would think of as LinkedIn. And then you've got LinkedIn, the community of people that use LinkedIn. And all three of those sort of spin off each other. And all three of those different stakeholders, if you like, go through change, and those changes affect the other two. The biggest change to LinkedIn over probably the last 5 years, without question, has been the community. LinkedIn, the company, and a knockoff to that, LinkedIn.com, the site, have adjusted to that change, but are largely driven by that change. And they wouldn't want to admit that. I'm sure they think that they're very much driving us to behave in certain ways, right? But actually, when you've been doing this as long as I have, and you see it, and you see the change in the way people have acted and been posting content, engaging with content, the kind of stuff that they're putting out there on LinkedIn, it's changed so dramatically. And LinkedIn have really had to respond to that. And that's the kind of thing that really keeps me on my toes and motivated. It's fascinating to me. It's interesting to see how an algorithm changes and understanding all of that daddy up. Great. But more interesting is people and what people do and why they do it and how that works and different ideas that come from other social media platforms and the innovation of other social media platforms and the effect that has on the users who then change what they do on LinkedIn. I just find that endlessly fascinating.
Hey, everyone, it's Matt here. I hope you're enjoying today's discussion. And before we continue, I wanted to make you aware of my latest creative project, This Week at Work. Presented in partnership with my good friend, Chris Rainey of HR Leaders, each Friday we'll live stream on LinkedIn at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and 3 p.m. GMT for our European viewers. And together bring you the latest trends, news on topics emanating from organizations, everything from culture to technology and the future of work. Joining is easy. Just follow me on LinkedIn, click the bell at the top right-hand side of my profile, and you'll get notified when we go live each week. And whether you do experience the content live or later, if you've been following me for a while, you'll no doubt recognize the fun banter Chris and I have developed over the years. And whether it's been podcasts or digital events, we're so excited to again bring you the topics affecting today's workplaces and their leaders. And now, back to our discussion. I couldn't agree with you more. And if you would bear with me for a moment, Mark, I'd love to share a bit about my experience, because I think it very much mirrors what you're talking about. you know, I think about 2008 on the platform, and I was still quite young in my career at that point in time. And like a lot of users, I saw LinkedIn as a job application platform, as a career page, as kind of the next iteration of job boards. And the only time I ever accessed the platform was when I needed a job or was looking for a job. Otherwise, didn't even consider the idea of logging on to build connection, to build community, to look for content. And I had that worldview for close to 10 years, actually, for that matter, and really just kind of saw the platform as a passive place. It was only until, I want to say about 4 or 5 years ago, perhaps, that I thought, there's something different happening on the platform. There's some more energy. I'm seeing more original content creation. I'm seeing more people kind of flex their creative muscle. And at the time, I was a CHRO in a multinational corporation and was looking for ways to be more innovative when it came to things like recruitment, when it came to things like organizational design. And rather than go to the traditional institutions for what I believed to be quite dated information and rather expensive, because it's usually hidden behind quite, you know, lucrative paywalls, I thought, let's crowdsource this. Let's actually go to the platform and see what's available. And at the time I had, I think about 400 or so, you know, kind of followers, and was just kind of, again, just putting in time, and the people that were on my LinkedIn platform, people that I knew personally or had worked with, very much a closed circle. And I had this change in perspective and said, hey, there's a big wide world out here and there's lots of people that have great ideas. Let's start to use the platform for a different purpose, to network, to share ideas, to contribute ideas. And I set about having a plan to have 10 unique conversations per week. And sitting down with 10 people, half an hour at a time, to have conversations about anything and everything. And it started, Mark, predominantly with business focused topics, you know, reaching out to other heads of HR or CFOs or CEOs, asking for perspective on myriad topics, whatever was topical for me at that moment. And as I started to have these conversations, like you mentioned, they brought me energy. They brought me enthusiasm. I got so much more passion for the idea of, wow, I can hop on a Zoom call with somebody in Africa, with somebody in Southeast Asia, with somebody in Western Europe, and have a really thoughtful, compelling conversation about really everything and anything. And yes, there was work, but there was also personal, and there was people would be really vulnerable and transparent. And I really got, you know, in a way, kind of addicted to the idea of networking and building connections. At the same time, I bumped into some people who were not really in my field of specialty. They were in marketing roles, or they were in social media marketing roles specifically, and they were starting to share more content. And at the time, Mark, I'm sure you remember this, LinkedIn actually had just introduced user-created video. So you could actually upload video onto the platform. And upload your video onto the platform. And I thought to myself, this is interesting. Again, for an individual that was deeply steeped in this corporate way of working, where you wouldn't dare think of sharing what's happening in your company to the outside world. Heaven forbid, people would actually know what's going on. And it started with me putting up contributions and thoughts around articles that I was reading from the Harvard Business Review, or from, you know, Forbes or The Economist or other types of assets. And then it quickly evolved into, let me try posting a couple of jobs. So let me post a job on LinkedIn as I normally would do, but let me accompany that with some video content where I just would simply explain, here's the job, here's what we're looking for from the successful individual, and here's who we are and here's who I am. And if you're interested, just, you know, send me a message, apply for the job, and look forward to getting your application. Mark, no expectations that this would do anything. So you can imagine my surprise when that post approached close to 100,000 views, thousands of messages, thousands of likes. And I went, there's something here. We're currently spending 20 to 30% of somebody's first year salary posting a job with an agency. Or I could spend 15 minutes to record a video on my iPhone, drop it on LinkedIn, and get 100x the exposure. Now, granted, there's a filtering exercise that has to occur when you have that much interest, but we were able to reach a far broader audience, get a significant cohort of qualified candidates, and then pretty soon actually had an abundance of people applying for jobs, which traditionally we would have a really difficult time filling. And it was a really interesting proxy because the more I started to share content, the more the algorithm and the platform was kind. And you know this better than most. The more you share, the more it gives. And the more you give, the more it shares for you. And Mark, I caught a very unique wave during this evolution where because the user-created video, the native video was so new at the time, LinkedIn was so heavily promoting it that I was getting significant algorithmic tailwinds. And yeah, I grew my audience from 400 and so odd followers to 30,000 in 90 days and did so on the strength of awful. Mark, I kept them on the platform just, you know, to keep me humble. But if you go back to my LinkedIn profile to four years ago, you'll see terribly shot iPhone videos from my office. My camera is way too close to my face. My ideas aren't anywhere near as structured as they should be. And it didn't matter. People appreciated the authenticity and they appreciated the contributions. And from that experience, exactly. And again, coming from a corporate world, Mark, which you know that previously the overproduction was what was valued, the stale, the static, the inhuman method of communication, that broadcasting versus actually connection and collaboration was what was prioritized. So again, the sliver in time, I managed to kind of squeeze my way through it kind of by accident. And that created a real fundamental shift in how I started to view social media in particular. I became a frequent content producer, and I've frankly built some friendships on the platform now that will be lifelong friendships that I have developed over the course of my last 4.5-5 years on the platform regularly, and have built friendships, have built business relationships, have been speaking to people for 5 years that I've never actually met in person. And it doesn't matter because we have enough in common and the platform in common that it creates such strong binds that are, you know, just really special to me. And I'm curious for yourself, as somebody who's been witness to the platform now for as long as you have, you know, can you think about any other inflection points or even just your broad sentiment of how dramatically the platform has evolved over the years?
Well, there's actually quite a lot of in what you've just said there. And it's really interesting to hear that story because a lot of those changes are reflected in your story. So the first thing I would just ask you is, did you say that your first video or videos were 15 minutes long? Did you say 15 minutes?
No, they were, I would say 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
Okay. All short. Right. I thought I heard you say 15 minutes. And I was thinking, crikey, that's a long time for LinkedIn, even back in the day. But 3 minutes, 3, 4, 5 minutes was commonplace around the time, I'm trying to remember the date now, but around the time when native video was first introduced and people were getting good results from that. Nowadays, you're lucky to get away with a minute, you know, and that's an interesting change. So the people's attention span has gone very much down the route of Instagram and TikTok, and they want something quick and easy, and they can consume it very, very quickly. There's more content, and so it's harder to get people's attention, and it's even harder to hold people's attention. So the nature of video has changed over that period of time, and you probably noticed that in terms of the stuff that you've done. What I would also say is that if someone listening to your story there thought, oh, great, okay, well, what I'm going to start doing is I'm going to go out there and start advertising jobs on LinkedIn. I'm going to do a post of me on video talking about where we are as a business and what we're looking to recruit. And that will be a solution, and I'll go viral and I'll get loads of responses. See, the thing about your story that's important is where you started that story. So you started by reaching out to people and engaging with people and building relationships with people. And through that process, you then started to gain more followers and you started to get more traction in terms of those relationships. Lots of activity on a one-to-one and one-to-many basis. So posting in there, maybe commenting on other people's posts, but also a lot of DMs and a lot of conversations that are, you know, backwards and forwards, direct messaging. And that is the pillars that you then build on, right? So that when you come to say, hey, I'm recruiting, now you've got an audience. Now something's going to happen. That would never have happened if you'd started off that way. And this is a massive mistake that people make with LinkedIn. So there's a real lesson for people in that. I'm not suggesting that you can't get quick results on LinkedIn. I've seen it many, many times. But the reality of this tool is that it is a networking tool, not so much a marketing tool. It can be used as a marketing tool, don't get me wrong. But the real win that people get more than anything else with LinkedIn is the networking benefit and the ability to get out there, build relationships with people, put time and effort into that, receive all the benefits that you described very well. So, you know, you're really learning stuff, you're widening your kind of perspective on business and life, and through that, developing friendships and relationships. And what's going on from a technical perspective behind the scenes is the algorithm is going, Matt Burns, he's doing a lot. He's speaking to lots of people here with these types of backgrounds who post this type of content, and more people starting to read his stuff. So hold on a second. This guy that we as an algorithm have, obviously algorithms don't have this conversation with themselves, but these people like Matt Burns that we've just ignored for years, hold on a second, this guy's come to life. And that's interesting. And there's some good activity going on here. So when he posts, we're going to send that to more people because there's a better chance that it's going to keep people on the page. Because yeah, people talk about mastering or cracking the algorithm. That's all rubbish, that really. I mean, if you want to crack the algorithm, understand, there's one simple thing you need to understand, really. Understand what LinkedIn are trying to do. If you understand as a business what they are trying to achieve, that is the most important thing, because that dictates how the algorithm is programmed. The algorithm obviously machine learns, so it adjusts to behavior. So if you know the community of people on LinkedIn and how they act, and you know what LinkedIn's aims are, then you know the algorithm. Simple as that. And of course, there isn't one algorithm. There's dozens, potentially hundreds of them, and they're all working for that purpose, right? So if when you post, it goes, right, we think you're quite popular. This Matt Burns guy is looking like he might be quite popular. So when he posts, we're going to put that post in front of a few more people now, and we're going to test and see whether we're right. So it does a little test, and yeah, it looks like people are responding well to this. So we're going to send it to more people. And next time we post, it's going to be to more people, because you are making the money. Yeah, you're keeping people on the page. You're allowing them to sell more ads. You're playing to the algorithm without trying to game the algorithm, right? It's not about trying to compete and game the algorithm. It's just about acting in a way that we know that LinkedIn want, yeah, because they want us to do things that keep people on LinkedIn. Simple as that. So that story, I think, demonstrates that. And, you know, the growth of followers and where you are now and the kind of traction you can get on your content now, all that is all built from that initial stage of getting out there and really engaging with people and building relationships.
Well, you're spot on, Mark, but wouldn't you know it, my thoughts around the platform evolved and ego did come into play at points along that journey. And I did find myself chasing numbers and accepting connection requests from people that really didn't make sense. And I had to quickly course correct, because I, to your point, realized that what we're talking about here is the attention economy, where whether it's LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or whatever you're looking at, we have finite amount of hours in the day, and there's a finite number of people on the planet. And the attention that we're providing to various platforms or outside of platforms entirely, people are competing for it. And to your point, LinkedIn, who is selling ad products and recruitment products, they're incentivized to promote content and to promote thought leadership that is effective insofar as keeping people on the platform. And understanding that, I think, to your point, is a really key point. And I've had innumerable conversations with people about the algorithm and gaming the algorithm and hacking the algorithm. And I've got to a place now where my own evolution, where much like yourself, I just try and selflessly share content and provide value and genuinely connect with people. And that has always had so much more benefit to me personally when I decouple it from the vanity metrics that are on LinkedIn. And, yeah. you know, it, I just want to say one more thing, which was one thing that I think the average user probably doesn't fully appreciate is even when you have tens of thousands of followers, which Mark, you and I both have, there's not a direct through line between number of followers and commerciality. Followers are an expression of people who are interested in your content, conditionally, mind you, but that doesn't guarantee a business. That doesn't guarantee commercial success. You still have to do all the work that you would normally do in any kind of business context. It just provides a bigger platform from which to share that content. So, you know, I love what you're talking about because I think it speaks to the true intent of the platform and having really good intentions around how we're using it.
Yeah, I mean, LinkedIn, going back, they still say this now, but going back early days of LinkedIn, they were very strong on this. They used to say, only connect with people that you know and trust. Now, if you'd done that, you probably wouldn't have got to where you are on LinkedIn. So that was bad advice. But I understood or understand now, looking back, where they were coming from with that. And it is still something that they kind of believe in, but they also accept that that's probably a bit over the top. You know and trust is, that's not networking. That's like, and if you go to a networking event full of people that you know well and trust, then that's a party. That's not a networking event. You know, that's not the point, right? You are wanting to connect with and reach out to people that you don't know, but that are relevant. You know, the people that you can see some purpose and relevance in actually connecting with that person, not just anybody. When you build a network that way, you will get numbers. You know, you're not going to end up with 500 connections. You will get numbers and numbers of followers because connection is a follower by default, of course. But those numbers will be relevant. And as a result of that, when you post relevant content that would be interesting to them, they're more likely to engage with it because the real secret to visibility on LinkedIn is to put out content that actually resonates with people. It's something of interest to them that stimulates them in some way. And, you know, people talk about vanity metrics, and I'm always a bit cautious on this one. So there's a lot of metrics that we can talk about on LinkedIn. Views, or what they've now renamed correctly impressions, is probably the worst and the most vanity metric there is, really. Because people go, oh, I got, you know, whatever, 10,000 views of this post or impressions. That doesn't mean anybody saw it. You don't know who saw that post at all. All you know is that it appeared on the homepage feed somewhere, could have been page 5, page 6, whatever, of some of your followers. But you don't know whether they saw it or not. To me, the metric that counts, always has been, always will, is comments. Meaningful comments. So you can get comments on your post that say, great post, well done, right? Not particularly meaningful. If you get comments that are developing the conversation that you can reply to with something else meaningful, then you're getting somewhere. Not just in terms of building relationships, which is important, not just in terms of your connections, seeing your comments, seeing how you are expressing yourself and learning more about you, which is very important, but also the algorithm, because the distribution of your content comes through people engaging with your content, specifically comments, and likes and other reactions are also helpful, but specifically comments are what the game is all about. Which is why when I talk to people about posting, one of my pieces of advice is post with the intention of starting a conversation. Think about conversation. Think about starting a conversation. And when you do, then people are more likely to comment. And that's when the thing comes alive. Otherwise, it's just posting stuff out there that nobody sees. If you do a post and it says you've got 5,000 impressions, but there's one comment and three likes, the only thing you know for certain is that one person definitely saw it and three other people might have seen it briefly or may have seen it and not felt the need to comment or not had the time to comment. And that's it. That's four max. Everything else, you have no idea whether they saw it or not. So views or impressions are a vanity metric, but still interesting because it is showing you the kind of metrics behind where the algorithm is sending it. So if it sends it to 1,000 people, if it sends it to 10,000 people, then there's something in that, right? If you got no comments and no reactions to a post and one went to 1,000 and one went to 10,000, then that's telling you something about the way the algorithm values you and your content generally. Your next post probably won't get 10,000 because if nobody comments and reacts again, then it's probably not going to favor you again.
I'm not sure I understand.
But yeah.
Oh, I think you're spot on. And I think it goes back again to the true intention of the platform and the content creators that I speak to on a semi-regular basis. The ones who view their success and or lack of success through vanity metrics ultimately find themselves underwhelmed because they're looking at the wrong metrics. And Mark, I was most satisfied with my LinkedIn experience in those early days where I was new on the platform and curious and discovering and meeting people for the first time. And I'll be honest, during the pandemic, I took a little bit of a break from the platform. I found it was actually becoming a distraction in amongst all the other things that I was working through both professionally and personally. So I kind of took a step back. I found that my content mark was becoming formulaic. I found that my engagement with my own content was dropping, that I was declining opportunities to connect with other people. And I knew that I needed to take a bit of a pause and that, yes, the algorithm wasn't going to like that. And that when I eventually restarted, that it would require some heavy lifting again to kind of get the momentum back, as it were. But ultimately, I felt that was the more preferable option than just trying to, you know, grind away and almost let the platform kind of control me. And that just didn't feel like the right decision. And now coming back more recently into the platform, beginning to share again and doing so with a lot more vulnerability, I'm rediscovering that love of networking and rediscovering that love of meeting with people and connecting with people without any expectations other than let's have a fun chat. Let's have a conversation.
Let me ask you a question. When you say coming back with more vulnerability, how did that feel doing that?
Awkward as all heck. Because, I mean, Mark, we've talked about it before. I mean, my background, I was in the corporate world for 20 years. I was in human resources, which is one of the more conservative functions within most corporate environments. I was deeply steeped in this idea of control the messaging, control the narrative, make sure you put your best foot forward. Everything was very thoughtful, but it was definitely more sanitized than what I think is currently acceptable on today in today's social media landscape. And one of the reasons why I took that approach early on in my LinkedIn tenure was because I was representing an organization. In part, the logo on the top of my profile was somebody else's company. I didn't own the company. I was an employee, and I was very lucky to have an organization and a board and a CEO that embraced the idea of me doing this networking. And as an individual who was architecting a digital transformation for this company, the ability to get extra, you know, external outputs was seen as a real positive in terms of gathering best practices. And yet still, I was hesitant to be fully transparent because I have obligations to my organization around transparency, but also privacy. And that definitely skewed the way that I showed up. Now owning my own business, I'm not encumbered by the same, you know, obstacles. I have more freedom to be able to share my feelings. And the last break gave me an opportunity to kind of take a step back, reset the way I wanted to come out the platform, and then reintroduce greater vulnerability. And I've been pleasantly surprised with the level of engagement from people and the types of thoughtful personal messages that I've received on the platform. People truly appreciate it. And I think that my story around expressing and sharing that more sanitized version of myself, you see it on every platform, Mark. I mean, I have a theory that people who post most often on Instagram are probably some of the most unhappy people that I know. Like, we're all trying to advance this perspective of life is good. Everything's amazing. Look at these trips I'm going on. Look at my perfect family. Look at my perfect life. And the reality is, in most cases, it's bollocks. And what I was trying to do was express some degree of vulnerability and some reality, because I think some people would have previously looked at my content and looked at my profile and gone, this guy's got it all figured out. When in a lot of cases over the pandemic, that couldn't have been further from the truth. So if anything, yeah. I hope it gave people some permission to go, you know what? I'm not feeling great today, or I haven't felt great before, and that's okay. What matters is the next moment, the next day, the next week, the next opportunity. You have a chance to rebrand, to reinvigorate yourself, and we don't have to hide behind this false veil of perfection.
Absolutely, and some really interesting points in that for me. I'll come back to the corporate angle in a second, but I think the way that LinkedIn works, can't talk for the social media particularly, but the way LinkedIn works is that people respond to things that they can relate to, content that they can relate to. Now, if you are being open and vulnerable and very honest about how you feel about things, then there will be some people that that doesn't resonate with and a lot of people that it does. And they're your people. You know, that's your audience. They're the people that will want to follow you, will share your content and will potentially buy from you. And moving that through to the kind of corporate aspect, because it's very honest of you saying, you know, well, I can do it when I work for myself, but a bit different when I work for a corporate, right? And I think there's probably people listening to this that will be in exactly that camp. And I totally get it's a lot harder, right? So it's very easy, me working for myself, to say this, and I fully appreciate that. But I think about organizations and the way they're structured and the way that their employees behave. And I think if only they could be more themselves, if they could actually open up and be real people. Yes, they're representing a brand, but part of the strength of the brand that they represent is that that brand employs real people with real personality, with real challenges. And if we can break through that kind of corporate robotic thing, then we see the organization differently. And that starts at the very top. You imagine a large organization out there where the CEO is posting on LinkedIn about things that they find difficult, things that they find challenging, things that they enjoy. I don't know, their attitude towards the future of work, expressing opinions, not just facts, but actually expressing opinions about what they feel. Because it's not just that they're communicating with the outside world and people learn about the organization through that, but also that they are communicating with their own employees and their customers, their current customers as well. And having that strength of character to go out and do that is, you know, fortune favors the brave, right? Having that, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and doing that. Obviously, with, you know, discussing it internally, these things, you can't just go out on a limb and just do them if you work for a corporate, but having some influence, trying to talk to the right people in the organization and say, these are the reasons why I think we should be more like this, more human, more acceptable, more real, then I think we as an organization will get benefit out of that. And the more people you can get doing that within a big corporate, the more you're likely to gain from that. And, you know, it's, as I say, it's difficult, especially if you've got like a PR or communications department, as LinkedIn have actually. One of my biggest criticisms of LinkedIn, they are getting better at this, but as an organization, when you watch the way they communicate on LinkedIn, it's very, very of a standard, a certain way that they communicate. And it you think, well, are these all just kind of, you know, robots, or are they real people? Because they're all communicating the same way. And this is very commonplace amongst organizations of that size. But once occasionally you do see someone who expresses a bit of character and a bit of personality and a few opinions, and then you start to think, this is a good company, right? It gives you that feeling, and that massively helps, I think, for recruiting people, for, you know, winning new clients, a whole range of things. You know, I think that massively improves the image of the organization if you can let employees be free and themselves. What do you think about that?
I think you're spot on. And I actually think there's, for a company as large as Microsoft, which for those who aren't familiar, own LinkedIn, among other platforms, there's even benefit, Mark, I think, of sharing internally. So again, although I'm no longer in a corporate HR role, that habit, those habits die hard. And I think a lot about LinkedIn as a networking platform. We've talked about it a lot in the context of external networking. I think the same opportunity exists for internal networking. And Mark, in 2019, I was fortunate enough to, or sorry, 2020, fortunate enough to work with Microsoft. And to do so in putting on a virtual reality conference, which during the pandemic was, let's be honest, one of the more bold decisions I've made over the course of my career. And I was really passionate about the idea of using a digital interface to create social intimacy. And I still am such a big advocate of the platform and of virtual reality in particular. And I assumed that when we started to collaborate with Microsoft, that we would be able to benefit from the breadth of their enterprise. So Microsoft, of course, but also LinkedIn. And the platform we ultimately chose for our virtual reality conference was a platform called Altspace, which is also owned wholly by Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you know it, our conference was the very first time that somebody ever live streamed virtual reality content from a Microsoft platform to another Microsoft platform in the form of LinkedIn, and the amount of effort that we had to go through at Microsoft to make those two systems connect to each other for entities that were within their umbrella was a significant lift. And it, to me, illuminated the opportunity that they have as a broader organization, one of the world's largest, to share more internally, because those individuals at Altspace at times could have very easily felt siloed off from other individuals.
Yeah.
And that was a really key point of our learning there. I would love to get your perspective on, one more thing that was just kind of tracing my mind, which is for individuals who are in the corporate world looking at the opportunity to use these tools more effectively, what really is the potential as you see it for LinkedIn?
Huge. I think the potential is to develop your personal brand. And that sounds very kind of like, I can see people looking up at the ceiling as I'm saying that. That term's been probably overused by a lot of people. But, LinkedIn is an opportunity for you to establish individuality and presence in amongst the community of business professionals on behalf, because everything you're doing on LinkedIn is on behalf of the organization that you work for. And there are many people now getting great, great benefit out of that, but there's plenty of room for more. So the opportunity is there. There's time that has to be dedicated to it. There's no easy solution to that. You can't just, say, oh, well, I'll post once every 3 months or something like that. You're going to have to put a bit of time and effort into it. But if you want to become better known, respected, and build better relationships, learn more from other people, and enhance your work life, then get on LinkedIn and start using it more. Get more active, start engaging with people. Your story is a very good example of what other people could and should be doing. And you can do that whether you're working for a large corporate or working for yourself. People that work for themselves, it seems an obvious thing to do, so they get on and do it. But for me, the area where there's the greatest area for development is people who work in larger organizations, and that opportunity to get out there. There are massive benefits for you on behalf of your organization. That's only going to help your career by getting more active, more visible, and better known on LinkedIn. So get out there and do it.
Mark, I had massive expectations for this conversation. I didn't want to share that with you beforehand because, pressure and all that. And somehow you managed to exceed them. Thank you so much for your time, for your contributions, for your passion around this important topic. I look forward to continuing the dialogue offline.
Well, thanks for having me, Matt. It's been brilliant. And I look forward to keeping in touch.
Bento HR is a digital transformation consultancy working at the intersection of strategy, technology, and people operations. We partner with organizations, private equity, and venture capital firms to accelerate value creation and identify the organization's highest leverage initiatives. And this can take place in many forms, from strategic planning and alignment to technology procurement, implementation, and integration, along with organizational design, process reengineering, and change management.
With our proven track record of working with complex, high-growth organizations, we provide a lens that goes beyond the balance sheet, increasing enterprise readiness, resilience, and value. For more information, check us out at bentohr.com.